Welcome to Season 1, Episode 6 of FX's Trust, John, Chapter 11. Today we find out that Paul is dead. Psych, he's actually alive, and some negotiations will be taking place. Plus, Belinda's pregnant, so is she going to keep the baby? Stay tuned.
You're tuning into the destination for TV superfan discussion, AfterBuzz TV. And now, let the buzz begin.
This is a very good peppy song to indicate that Paul is finally saved. We have some good news. I want to quickly say that Juliet is actually in the booth right now. She is engineering the show, but she will be adding her opinions and still be contributing. She just won't be seen in this week's episode. Only heard. Yeah, there she is. And over here to my left, we have Monique.
Hey, everybody. It's me, Monique. We have another week of greatness going on in Trust. A little more action for me this episode.
Yeah.
And got real emotional. Got real in depth with a few people.
I loved it. And by the way, I am your host, Mina Wahab, filling in for Juliet today. And yeah, let's just dig right into this. You said that you liked this episode a little bit more than previous episodes because there's finally some action.
Well, not only action, I definitely feel like this was a more in-depth episode too. And we got to see other people that we haven't seen. We got to delve more into like Bullimore and we saw the more, I would say, the side of the kidnappers, Salvatore, we saw more of a human side to him.
Yeah.
So I felt like this was a good episode.
That's what I love about this show. The characters aren't black and white. Like, even the villains, there's depth there. It's not like they're 100% pure evil. Everyone has a motive, and they have a certain way they want to accomplish that goal. And for them, it's like, these are the means they want to take to achieve that goal of power in Italy.
Right.
And, you know, same with Gail. I mean, the Italian paparazzi aren't too fond of her not crying or expressing emotion, which I thought was so interesting. I mean, she doesn't feel the need to cry in front of the paparazzi, but we all know how torn she was. And this week's episode starts out with flashbacks of Gail, played by Hilary Swank, and her relationship with Paul throughout the ages. What did you think of that?
I thought it was good. And actually, I want to say this because it kept throwing me off. Hilary Swank and the Paul, the grandson Paul, they actually really look alike.
They like, totally do. I didn't even notice that.
Like, in real life when they were doing the flashbacks, I was like, oh my gosh, are they related in some way? looked it up. I don't think they're related in any way, but they do actually kind of look very similar. Like, that could really be her son. But I thought it was good. At least we kind of saw why the dynamic between her and her boyfriend and Paul, the grandson, isn't that great. Why he doesn't like Jeffries.
Yeah. We obviously see that the stepdad kind of causes a rift between him and his mother, when in reality, you know that there is that very close mother-son bond. He's the favorite. I mean, he's the firstborn.
She explains all of that, which is really good because we get to see her really talk about why she does all of these things for him and why she's always so, like, I have to get you money when you show up, or I have to do this as much as I can. So that breakdown was really good when she was just like, you know, you, as a parent, you should never have a favorite, but he was our first.
Yeah.
So, you know, that was good. And that was a great moment.
You see the soft side of Paul as well, and you know how he's just like so loving and just loves to like live life and spend time with his mom. And I feel like most teens like that age, they're not like hanging out, chilling with their mom. Like, that's not the age at which, you know.
Yeah, that's true. But I think guys can be different.
Yeah.
Guys are, even younger guys, they're different, I think, when it comes to parents, than how girls are. place.
How so?
I don't know. I feel like they're more calm, cool, collected, so they'll kind of just, like, hang out with their parents, or they'll hang out with their friends, or... And I may be wrong, but with girls, I feel like we try to stray as far away as we can from our mothers to kind of, like, identify ourselves.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. I feel like they're more...
I feel like
they
usually
tend to have
it's
better
like
relationships with their moms.
Gravitate towards the mom, and women, girls, like gravitate towards their dads. Like I'm a mama's girl though. Like I'm so close to my mom, but I love that you know Paul was wearing a skirt, and that's why the stepdad freaked out. And I just think it just shows like that difference between like how Paul is so comfortable with, you know, his femininity, and he doesn't subscribe to these gender norms at all. He doesn't have to wear pants. He's just like such a free spirit.
Yeah.
And the dad just has like this, the stepdad I should say, just has like this very
manly,
like
more
really toxic view of masculinity. It's just straight up toxic masculinity, and that's like kind of what causes that rift. It's just like one of the examples. We've always seen that rift between them for a while, but it's just good to get that background to see why Paul is the favorite, and the dynamic between the mom. I called it last episode. I was like, I really want to see flashbacks in the mother-son dynamic, because I wanted to really understand the loss that she was going through and get a good sense of like that.
And
that
we
bond.
Did, yeah, we got a good sense of it this episode, which I thought was great.
I thought it was also surprising dynamic. How she's not standing up to him, right? The step father hits her son, and he is even bleeding, right? And she kind of is on the sidelines. So now that there's all these craziness happening with her son's kidnapping, I think she's living a lot of guilt, and that's what those flashbacks were showing me.
Yeah. No, that's a really good point, Juliet. I mean, I think that, you know, you see her kind of stand up to her boyfriend in one of the previous episodes. I believe it was like 3 episodes ago, where she tells, you know, her boyfriend, get out of the house right now, get out. Because, you know, that probably did come into her mind, like, wow, this boyfriend caused the rift between me and my son, and now my son is actually gone for real this time. She doesn't even want, like, any association with the boyfriend because of her frustration, and she doesn't feel like she's being supported by him to find her son and to kind of... Like, he doubts that he thinks that this whole thing is a hoax, and he doesn't think that it's real. So just her being questioned for something that's so dear to her, you already finally see her having that courage and that intensity and the love she has for Paul just shine through. And she changes from, like, this more docile character to a more, you know, firm and bold and aggressive person that's not going to take any BS from anyone. So
yeah,
I
right.
love that transition.
I think so too. And I think what was really, really cool about this episode is that each character's reaction gave us a little bit more intel on who they are, right? So Gail is, we see that she has regrets. We see that she's strong. And then this kind of went down with Getty, who cries towards his secretary.
Yeah.
Then you have Penelope, his girlfriend, who was, yes, she's really upset and sad that little Paul is gone, but part of her is also really upset that Getty's just reacting the way that he is reacting. Then you have
Baltimore,
who, same thing, is feeling some guilt because he's met Paul, yet he's also thinking, wait, what's my identity in this whole family and structure? And I thought it was this, we saw this theme throughout the episode, which I thought was so, so cool. I always love to hear more and learn more about characters in these shows.
Yeah. That's all really interesting. That's so, like, insightful, because how they react is kind of indicative to their character. I mean, all of these characters think Paul is actually dead. You know, it's been confirmed, or so they believe. And just seeing that, like, stark difference between characters. You see that the dad, the actual dad of Paul Getty III, is actually enraged. But what does he turn to? What's his coping mechanism? How does he deal with it? Oh, he goes back to drugs and he reverts. How does Gail deal with it? She's more in a state of denial. You know, she doesn't want to believe it. She has,
I mean, because the mother has intuition. I feel like she knows. So I mean, yeah, like everybody had their different reactions. I felt like in this episode also, it's funny because we got to see a Getty Senior is like, having this whole breakdown when he finds out that he thinks that, you know, his grandson is dead. He's like, you know, he made me laugh. He's the only person that made me laugh. He mm-hmm. was, you know, this person. As you sat there and said, people want to mourn you when you die, but yeah. don't care when you're living. And, like, he wanted to mourn him when he died, but when he found out, he just went snap back to being yeah. the horrible person that he is.
Yeah.
And it was just, like, an immediate, oh, now I don't have to feel bad anymore. He's mm-hmm. still alive. At least he's still alive. I'm right. I'm the right one. So I felt like everyone did have a different, a major different reaction mm-hmm. in their own kind of like way.
So. I feel like a lot of people don't really appreciate what they have till it's gone. I know that's a very cliche saying, but it's so true. It's like, yeah, when you have true. Something, you take it for granted or you might overlook it. Once it's gone, you realize the value once you're a little bit more removed from it. And then you start thinking, oh, how did I treat this person? What was my dynamic like? And you tend to reflect on the good as opposed to the bad when someone is no longer in your life.
Right.
And you know, the thing that I found really interesting with Paul's reaction, Paul Getty Sr.'s reaction to the so-called death of Paul Getty, of little Paul.
Yeah, the grandson. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, what I thought was shocking was he's okay being vulnerable to his secretary and letting his tears flow and being authentic, but that authenticity isn't present when he's with his actual wife, Penelope. And I think it shows that he doesn't want to show any sort of vulnerability or signs of weakness with Penelope, not because he doesn't respect her, mm-hmm. but actually quite the opposite. He does respect her, and I think he has a certain insecurity within himself where he wants to constantly appear like he is the alpha, like he is strong, like he is, you know, the main person that will never show a single sign of weakness, and he takes emotion for weakness.
He is the emperor.
Right.
He's the emperor. That's so funny. Yes.
He definitely...
reincarnated.
Right. He definitely does. I don't know. I think it's a subconscious thing. It's... You get deeper into it, but it's a subconscious thing when you have something and then it's gone and then you're like, oh my gosh, like this is all the things. So I think he stuffs all his emotion and self subconscious like empathy inside.
Mm-hmm.
Because as a business person, and you know, most business people will know that sometimes you have to shut off emotionally.
Mm-hmm.
And you to continue to have that, like even when what's his name? The officer guy. I forget his name right now.
But oh, Bullimore?
No.
Oh, which one? Oh, Brendan Fraser's character.
Yeah, him. He actually said to him, you know, he had that conversation mm-hmm. with him. And was it him? No, I think it might have been the secretary when she walked in. I take that back. Sorry. I think it was the secretary. She was like, this is not a business deal. It was either her or Penelope.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, this is not a business deal. And you cannot treat it as a business deal. And as he walked through it at the end when she questioned him, he still treated it as a business deal. And she was like, see, that's what I mean.
Mm-hmm.
You're treating this as a business deal, and it's not a business deal. This is a actual person.
Mm-hmm.
So sometimes it's hard to cut off when you're career so much.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard to cut that off and tap back into the emotional, like, this is a person. This is how you're right. normally supposed to react.
And, you know, I feel like a lot of people in this world, like, they don't take their pride just from their work. They're like, oh, I'm not just an actress. I'm also a mom. I'm a model. I'm an entrepreneur. I right. give to charity. I do this. With Paul Getty, I feel like even though he's so successful, he's not well-rounded. He gets his self-worth, like, specifically from a number. How much wealth does he have? What does he own? It's all very materialistic. I feel like, gets his sense of pride from status. And status is something that is, in large part, determined by other people.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of his self-worth depends on what people say his value is based on the amount of things he has accumulated throughout the course of his life. And that's very toxic. And I think one of the most important things is to learn how to be a well-rounded person. And with certain podcasts, you really can learn to be a well-rounded person. Certain podcasts teach you how to be better in all aspects of life. So
yes, definitely.
I want a podcast recommendation. What's a podcast I should listen to?
Okay, so you have to listen to The Conversations with Maria Menounos. If you want to have fun, learn, and grow in all areas of your life, for those who do, we have the best podcast for you. Conversations with Maria Menounos Podcast Edition is hosted by our AfterBuzz founder and drops every Friday on iTunes. Conversations with Maria Menounos features celebrity and influencer interviews along with secrets and tips on how to be better in all aspects of your life. From health and wellness to career, relationships, finances, and more. Let our Maria be the big sister you've always wanted. Just go to iTunes and subscribe to Conversations with Maria Menounos for free. I mean, you know, that's the best. Be sure to rate, comment, and when you do, let Maria know it was us at Trust who sent you. Conversations with Maria Menounos Podcast Edition. Make sure you check it out. And that's one who could have helped round this
situation. It would have. I was actually just listening to her last week, and she was talking about she was actually talking to a doctor who had done a lot of research about being vegan and not eating meat. And I know, like, a lot of people are like, oh, veganism, like, it's such a fad and it's such an LA thing.
Right.
But it literally convinced me to cut out meat. So, like, I had, like, chicken today, but I'm, like, gradually cutting my meat intake because I was so convinced after listening to that podcast. So, like, she has, like, all these cool little tips and tricks and I love listening to it on my commute. So
right.
There's always something for me to gain by listening to it.
This, I know, and this family clearly needed to gain from
it. 100%. The good news is that they finally find out that Paul is alive. I love that, you know, Hilary Swank's character Gail is relentless. She stops at nothing to find the truth. Her character is tenacious. She is driven. And what she does is, after she's stormed by the paparazzi and she, like, leaves, she decides to go to this place where the burned body is.
The morgue,
mm-hmm. Yeah. And thank you. I couldn't remember the word for that. She goes to the morgue. So much more concise. And she says, I'm going to pay you $50. I need to see the body. And she fights for that. She fights to see the body.
She remembers stuff. She has a mother's intuition.
Yeah.
Which, you know, I feel like a lot of mothers would do that in that instant just to make sure that this is, you know, there's still hope. And clearly there was, so.
Can you imagine, though, if she didn't find out? Like, I kept wondering when I was watching the episode, I was like, what if she didn't find out? Like, I don't understand what they were planning by burning a random person's body and making it seem as if J. Paul Getty III was actually dead. Like, what kind of game is that? That makes no sense to me.
I think they just really, really wanted to scare them.
Well, not even that. It's like, we have the power. It's a power struggle.
Like, that's why when this to Paul.
Yeah, that's why when Salvatore and, like, when Salvatore and Getty Sr. met up, it was such, like, a, oh my gosh, he's brave. And it was, and he was saying before, like, Primo, all I want to do is be a Getty. And so when they meet up, you can, it's like when you go into a room with two billionaires and you're like, oh my gosh, like, I'm here. Like, you're in a room with Oprah and somebody else and you're like, oh my gosh, it's Oprah. It's kind of one of those things. It's a power thing. There's power in that right there. So even though we may not have the money, I feel like they were saying, even though we may not have the money, you want to play with us? Okay, we're going to show you who really has the hand here. And it's not you.
And Getty even said it himself. There's nothing like a dead body to put things into question. And it's true that it shook every character up, right? Every single character was like, oh my gosh. So it was a good wake-up call that they needed.
It was.
It really was. I mean, what do you think of all of their reactions, though, once they found out that Paul was alive? I mean, there were such varied reactions. You have, you know, the son, or the father of J. Paul Getty III,
who storms
in and wants to like tell his father the truth that no one else has told him.
Well, first he was, to me, I don't know if they just did it for the episode, but to me it was like he retreated back to drugs and drinking so quickly, like he was waiting for a reason to go back. And then And then, yeah, he goes in and confronts his father and gets sent back, like, oh, trash. Damn. He was, like, mm-hmm. with his head hanging. Yeah.
That's the part that... Basically. That scene did kind of bother me, not gonna lie, because the way that Paul Getty Sr. says, oh, your son's alive, he says it in a way where, as if, like, he had control of the situation and he knew the entire time that he was alive. Like, he's had everything under control. That's the type of air of confidence I feel like he... display to his son, and that really annoyed me.
It's and power.
Like, it's so frustrating.
Because it wasn't even a celebration. It was like, see, I gotcha.
Yeah it's all about power. It's
so true.
Power is more, sometimes power is more than money.
Mm-hmm.
And when you
it's
have
authority.
It, yeah, and when you have it, you're going to try to use it to your advantage.
Yeah.
So I think that's just what he does. And that's his mindset. That's taken over his mind. So it doesn't matter who's in his path.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, oh, I got you.
Mm-hmm.
So the fact that I know and you don't know and you're coming in here, you know, making a fool of yourself.
Yeah.
I'm just going to sweep you up real quick.
It was so telling about that character, right? Because at the end of the day, we're all dealt a certain our cards, right?
Mm-hmm.
It is how you deal. We've been learning more about Getty himself, that he had a tough childhood
because mm-hmm.
his mother didn't fully love him because
mm-hmm.
he was kind of like a makeup child after they had lost a son, a daughter actually.
Yeah, daughter.
Yeah, and now you have Getty the father, who Getty the second, I believe, who's just getting completely drunk, completely taking all these drugs, and it's his way of coping, right? But
mm-hmm.
it's like that really shows you who he is as a character. He's not taking any responsibility.
Right.
He's not trying to help out any other characters, trying to see how poor Gail's doing, like, doesn't try to contact her. He's all about himself, and then he's like, I'm going to go show him. I'm going to go show Getty.
Yeah.
What's happening?
It's,
he shoots himself in the foot. He makes things even worse.
Mm-hmm.
I think he makes things worse for himself, but I honestly think that this was his first moment where he really expressed how he really felt about his father. And I can't gloss over this fact either, is that, yes, we got a full... on in-depth conversation with Getty Sr. about how his parents, he was the makeup child.
Mm-hmm.
So all of these, it just goes to show me, like, all of these problems he has and all of these problems that he's passed on to his kids
mm-hmm.
stemmed from how his parents treated him
mm-hmm.
because he always felt like the one who they didn't want.
Right.
And I just feel like he's making up for that. He tries to make up for that. And he's always tried to make up for that. And that was such a pivotal moment in this episode. And I feel like a pivotal moment for us to kind of understand Getty Sr. too.
Right. And you know,
and why he is the way he is subconsciously. He
right.
doesn't even really understand that. But when he said that, it was just a breakdown of, oh my gosh, like, this is why he is the way he is. And
mm-hmm.
he doesn't even understand. He's like, we had a few episodes
right.
before where he was like, oh, I don't understand why all my kids are on drugs. Or,
mm-hmm.
you know, I don't understand the drug. Because they're trying to cope. And that was their mechanism to cope for the way that you have treated them.
Right.
Clearly we even see it.
He's so blinded by that. And, you know, I'm not trying to simplify things in such a narrow way. But I honestly believe that so much of the world's problems are because people have either not been loved properly, and hence they don't know how to love, or there was some relinquishment of power. They were helpless in some way as children, where now they try to get that power, or there was some sort of void. Because the way you were treated as a child, the way you were raised, has a huge impact on who you become as
yeah.
an adult. And if you're not aware of those patterns in childhood, it's very hard to move forward and break that pattern. Because...
Yeah.
It's a lot of it is nature. A lot of it is how were we nurtured.
And even with, you know, how his kids were treated, and now when we see, we find out that Belinda is pregnant,
mm-hmm.
and with finding out that Belinda is pregnant, he's just kind of like, whatever, we have a contract. Like, everything to him is about
business.
A business.
Yeah.
Like, he never has a moment to like, separate himself from the business.
Right.
And he's like, you're in breach of contract.
Mm-hmm.
And don't you see, why would I want another son? They're just a disappointment.
Right.
But then...
I want it to be a daughter.
Towards the end, we get, you know, the advice from Salvatore, who doesn't even have kids.
Mm-hmm.
But we get to see how even in power, how somebody is knows how to make their family before the business.
I feel like it's such an Italian thing.
Yeah, it was like a dynamic that met and was just like, okay, this is business.
Yeah.
But you have to understand this is family too.
Yeah.
So,
I thought it was a good commentary on what is worthy, right?
Mm-hmm.
As you're saying, Monique, is that he has all the money in the world, but are you really rich when you have no family or no love? And you're
right.
Like, you're the poorest man, actually.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And I felt like Salvatore, towards the end of their conversation, actually made that, you know, a point to him. Like, he's like, I have no kids.
Humans are social animals.
Yeah, I have no kids. I don't have a son. But if I did, I, you know, don't disown your sons. Like,
right.
Or your empire, the everything that you've built and worked for so hard will crumble. And there's no reason why it should have to.
Yeah, and there was even that very, like, symbolic moment where Paul Getty Sr. picks up a piece of, it was like some sort of historic piece or, like, ancient artifact, and picks it up from the ground. And he says in Italian, everything eventually turns to dust, which is true. And knowing that that's true, what is the legacy you want to leave behind? We all know that at the end of the day, both kings and pawns go in the same box. It's one of my favorite chess quotes because it's so indicative of how life is. Like, it doesn't matter what your status is. You can be rich or poor, but death is the great human equalizer. What do you want your legacy to be? Do you want your legacy to be something where you were just known for being the richest man in the world? Or what do you want to do with that wealth? Who do you want to help? Who do you want to inspire? The point of life, I feel, in my opinion, is to have an impact in whatever way, whether that's being a mother or, you know, raising a family, or whether it's creating a charity organization and helping people who are in need. There's so much more to life than just accumulating wealth and not doing anything with that wealth other than doubling it and tripling it and quadrupling it. Because at the end of the day, that's just money. That's a paper currency that really has no value when you think of things in the larger scheme of the universe.
Yeah, and I really think that's what, you know, I feel like Salvatore really put the focus on him to, like, get out of business and like, kind of get to know your family and stop disowning them, because you can have a bigger empire than what you are planning to even have. So, you know, that was great. And, you know, one of my favorite parts of this episode was actually the smallest part, which was finding out Penelope's side piece.
Oh,
Penelope,
my gosh, has a side piece
to make this a little lighter. Yeah. Like,
and she didn't want to travel with him to Italy. She's like, I have plans. I'm good. And I remember you laughing at that scene, like, oh, yeah, where's the power? Where's the power now?
Right, because he has, yeah, exactly. It was like she kind of took back her power in that moment.
And she totally did.
I loved every bit of it, because this whole episode, as we can see, was a back and forth, really about power, really about, you know, let me show you type situation. Let me ruffle your feathers type situation. And totally, like, I feel like she took back that power, and it really was like, okay, somebody took back their power. And, you know, that was great.
Let's talk really quickly about the numbers when it came to the negotiation, and then afterwards we're going to go into predictions really quickly. But when we see the negotiations taking place between J. Paul Getty Sr. and Salvatore, we see that it starts off at $15 million, and there's this whole speech about how J. Paul Getty Sr. loves his son, or loves his grandson, but, you know, $15 million isn't the number, or he can't quantify that love with $15 million, because, yeah, he loves him.
$17 million
dollars isn't the number that he can quantify his love for his son. So then he says, you know what, I can do $2 million. And we get into this whole, like, dynamic where Salvatore is talking about how he really gets on, like, a very authentic level with him, where he says, you know what, right now we're not in a position of power, and we're really trying to get into the best restaurants, to have connections to politicians, to newspapers, and really, like, switch the power in Italy right now, because we are the poorest of the poor, and things aren't going to change unless I have money.
Yeah.
And $2 million, which was J. Paul Getty, the senior's offer, he says $2 million isn't enough for me to accomplish that. So then he doubles it to $4 million. And then finally it becomes $5 million. And he says, okay, we have ourselves a deal. Mm-hmm. And I thought the most interesting way of negotiations taking place was, you know, this is someone who is in need of money, but he still has the power because he has the kid and he has the ability to take away human life, and nothing is more powerful in a dark way than the ability to take away life. Mm-hmm. So there is no number that can quantify human life. It's priceless. And I think that was really his weapon. And I love that we finally come to an agreement and, you know, there's hope now. Yeah. And with that being said, I want to get into predictions to figure out, well, what's going to go on next episode.
Right. Yeah. He. Oh.
Now we have a little bit more time to think about it. After Buzz TV predictions.
I am really, yeah, I don't know. I'm torn. I mean, we see next week a little more of the senior, you know, and I just, I don't know.
So, Juliet, what do you think about Paul Getty Sr. and the negotiations that took place? Like, do you think that, I mean, we leave the episode with him saying, I'm not going to pay the $5 million. Right. I've done the hard part.
Yeah.
Which is so frustrating. I was so angry and annoyed and frustrated. What? Who's going to pay this? How is anyone going to afford $5 million?
Well, he said his son was. And then next week we see the episode where there's, like, flashes of money. Like,
stacks.
Yeah, stacks of money going out. So I don't know what's going to happen. Like, did he pay from, like, an inheritance or something?
Mm-hmm.
Is my question. I guess we get to see that. So, yeah, I would like to see more of that.
Yeah, definitely. Mm-hmm. I just want to know, like, what's going to happen.
I want to see the reaction, mainly. This son who was thrown out of the house.
Mm-hmm. Once he's told.
For telling him off, and now he's like, okay, pay up $5 million.
Right. Yeah. After he said all of that, after he was all like, you're a murderer because you didn't pay. Like, are you going to be a murderer now? Because do you have the money to pay this $5 million?
Exactly. And what I would really, at my prediction slash what I really, really want to see moving forward is more of Penelope and her boyfriend. I really
yes.
Love that. It's like, I want to know more how they got together, how that whole ordeal is going. Like, we followed Getty going to Italy. I want to follow their weekend getaway or a staycation or whatever is actually going on between the two.
Right. And that actually brings up the fact that we didn't actually get time to touch on it, but Bullimore, who we find out his name is Jungier Khan, is him and this guy, are they going to be something? Because
I feel like they already are, and it's just going into the next step, because we meet the aunt, and she's like, oh, I've heard so much about you. It seems like they're already an item. That's what I gathered.
But no, because when she brought it up about the bed, Bullimore walked away, or Jung-hae walked away, and he was like, this is already impossible. So is he struggling with the fact of maybe being gay and doesn't want to come out, or
I felt that a little bit. Yeah. I definitely felt like he kind of didn't want to admit to that, and he was already, we see him going from like this very proper structured guy to finally letting loose and dancing, which right. I was like, Bullimore dancing?
So what's happening? So I would like to see more of him. Are they going to be an item? And like, are we going to see more of that?
I would love to see more of that, too. And I see it's actually, you make an interesting point, because I more saw him walk away thinking that he was just uncomfortable with the idea of living anywhere else but in the Getty family.
Oh, wow. I didn't think about that.
He seemed very uncomfortable. I think, for me, it was more so that.
Oh,
it was
wow.
More so like, oh, wait. I've been in with these people for so many years, and he's kind of imprisoned in a way with this structure. And he complains about it that he's not there; they don't call him by his right name.
But right.
He's so ingrained in this family, and I think just the thought of it, him leaving, is just unbearable.
That's a great point. I didn't think about it that way too. And it's funny that we see two different sides of it. And I would like to see more of that. Like, is it what you said, Juliet, or is it like, is he nervous about being gay or coming out?
Right. I think it's a little bit of of both, to be honest with you.
And my final my final question for you two is Belinda going to keep the baby? Because right now she has an ultimatum for her breach of contract. Either she keeps the baby and she gets out of the Getty house, no association to the Getty family anymore, or she has the abortion and she stays with the Getty family.
I don't know. I would like to see what she does, too, because, honestly, I think they're all kind of in prison. They're used to living a certain type of way, and sometimes when you get comfortable in that, it's hard to let go. Mm-hmm. And you don't... When you're walking into the unknown, it's very scary. Like, nobody wants to do it on their own. So, I don't know. She's a little bit more mature, too. That's why she was like, oh, I'm pregnant. How could this be?
And it's her last opportunity to have a child.
Yes. So, she has a really hard decision. And I want to see more of that, too. Like, is she going to have it? Is she not going to have it? Mm-hmm. Like, why would she make that decision? Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
Yeah. For some reason, my heart is telling me that she's going to keep the child and leave. Because at this point, if she doesn't keep the child and she stays, she's going to resent Getty regardless. She doesn't want to stay. So it's like a lose-lose. She might as well just keep the baby and fend for herself now. And I don't know. What do you think, Juliet?
I don't know. It's a tough one, man. Mm-hmm. I don't. It's two scenarios. She could either keep it thinking, you know what, I'm going to convince him and I'm going to have this baby and he's going to have to take care of me financially. Mm-hmm. Or she just doesn't even want to take that risk and she gets rid of it. But I don't know. I'm fascinated by these characters who are living within this institution, right? I don't see the appeal because none of them seem really, really happy, if I'm being quite honest.
Right.
It's like, why are you there? You're just like, you're showered with all this money, but you're like in prison. Like, what's the point of having money if you don't get to enjoy it?
Everyone's so miserable.
They are. And that happens, though. That happens to a lot of people in general. Like, and I feel like I say that because I've just gotten out, you know, done my own situation like that. You just get comfortable. Mm-hmm. Like, you don't even realize that you're not happy. Mm-hmm. You're just going with your everyday. And you forget about yourself.
Right.
Because you're so focused on serving someone else that you forget about yourself.
You can buy comfort, but you can't buy happiness. You can't buy love. You can't buy freedom.
Until a major situation comes up, like her pregnancy. And then you have to rethink stuff, or like Bullimore or Jung-Hae is, you know, maybe getting into a relationship with somebody. Like, you don't, mm-hmm. it does not hit you that you're uncomfortable, that you're not happy until something major, like, disrupts everything that's going
on. Right. And we need those small disruptions or giant disruptions in life to really reevaluate what we want out of life and the type of person we want to become and how we want to grow.
Definitely.
Because it's those moments that allow for growth. And
definitely.
Being stagnant, that's the worst thing ever. I feel like it's worse than having the bumps along the way. This plateauing, that's the most devastating. But I do want to wrap this up by saying the one thing that I love the most about this week's episode was the cinematography. It was insane, especially that movie theater scene where you see the silhouettes. I loved every minute of the cinematography, the music. Just the overall production was incredible this episode.
Yeah.
I'm looking forward to more of that next week's episode.
Right.
And I want to see if your predictions are going to come to life, if Juliet's predictions are going to come true and come to fruition.
Right.
But in the meantime, where can everyone find you?
You can find me. I'm Annie Loveless, and you can find me everywhere on all platforms at Miss Mo Loveless. And also, make sure you look up my website, MoniqueLoveless.com. And I'm also on The Voice every Tuesday at 10 p.m. So make sure you tune in so that you can see all that's going on there.
And Juliet, where can they find you?
You guys can follow me on Instagram at Bonjour Juliet. Also, make sure to watch I Do Trust. Obviously, this is a show. I do a show called Good Girls on AfroBuzz TV, which is lots and lots of fun. So really go check that out. It's amazing.
Very cool. And hey, everyone, I'm Mina. You can find me at Mina Makes Magic on Instagram. You can also tune in to this new show on National Geographic called Genius Picasso. It's where Antonio Banderas plays Picasso, and it is beautiful. It is such a great show. And also make sure to subscribe to YouTube and go to AfterBuzz TV Dramas, and make sure to follow AfterBuzz TV on Instagram, on Twitter, at AfterBuzzTV and let us know what some of your favorite shows are. Make sure to engage with us because we really take your comments seriously. And if you have any feedback at all, make sure to write that in the comment section below because we want to make this show exactly what you want it to be. We really do care and we read every single one of your comments. So make sure to do that below. And until next time, I will see you guys later.
From executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
Buzz you later.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.